WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is Monday. Yes, the weekend is gone. I feel like just like 9 minutes ago it was Friday. My goodness, time flies when you're having fun. A busy, busy weekend for sports, folks. We'll talk Lions as they just get romped on by the New England Patriots yesterday. MSU topping Rutgers in the final home game of the year. Yes, it was senior day as well. We'll chat about that. And where do the Spartans now move on to now? I mean, what are they playing for and so on and so forth? We'll also talk a little bit about Michigan as they, it continues. The woes continue for them. They fall to Maryland. We'll bring you our weekend winners and so much more. And, hey, we'll even honor the MSU women's cross-country team. Folks, if you haven't heard by now, they are national champions, folks. Unbelievable stuff. I actually got a chance to chat with Walt Drenth right after he won that national championship, the day after, I want to say, yesterday morning. You'll get to hear that chat, an interesting one to say the least. All of that and so much more, and we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to tonight's MSU men's basketball game as they, they have another one, folks, down at the Briz against, I believe, Santa Clara. Santa Clara is the game, so we'll be handing out tickets to you. But before we get to all of that jazz and so much more, here's my man Jock DeWitt with your current sports quick hit headliners for this November 24th.
This is Jock DeWitt here with the current sports quick hit headliners for Monday, November 24th. MSU women's cross country won the national championship for the first time ever on Sunday. Rachel Shulis led MSU finishing fourth, Lindsey Clark placed 11th, and Big Ten Women's Athlete of the Year Leah O'Connor finished 17th with a time of 20 minutes and 20.8 seconds to lead Michigan State. MSU Women's Basketball beat IUPUI 64-45. Forward Ariel Powers had her third official double-double of the season, and Tori Jankowska led all scorers with 22 points. Men's basketball also came out with a win this weekend as they beat Loyola of Chicago 87-52 on Friday. Five Spartans scored in double figures, including senior forward Brandon Dawson and true freshman Marvin Clark, who scored 15 points apiece. The Spartans will take on Santa Clara tonight at 7 o'clock. Spartan football moves up to 10th in the AP poll after a 45-3 win against Rutgers on Saturday. Senior wide receiver and now cornerback Tony Lippitt surpassed the 1,000-yard receiving mark with 72 receiving yards on 5 receptions. The Spartans look to finish the regular season with 10 wins as they travel to Penn State to take on the Nittany Lions this Saturday. The Wolverines racked up their 6th loss on the season after a 23-16 home loss on Senior Day to Maryland. Devin Gardner finished 13 of 24 with 106 yards passing and an interception as drop balls cost Michigan a win on Senior Day. Michigan concludes their season against arch-rival Ohio State and Columbus this Saturday, needing a win to become bowl eligible. The Lions had an ugly showing yesterday in New England. Their 34-9 loss to the Patriots puts them in second place in the NFC North. Quarterback Matthew Stafford finished the game 18 for 46 and was under pressure for most of the game. The Lions' next game will be this Thursday against the Chicago Bears, and this will be the first of a 3-game homestand for Detroit. Former San Francisco Giant, the Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval, has agreed to a 5-year, $90 million deal with the Boston Red Sox. This deal comes one day after the Red Sox were close to finalizing a deal with former Los Angeles Dodger, Hanley Ramirez. Three local teams have made it to Ford Field, including Ithaca, who will take on Monroe St. Mary's Catholic Central, Lansing Catholic taking on Grand Rapids West Catholic, and Lansing Sexton taking on Grand Rapids South Christian. And those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's send it back to Tony Romo's biggest fan, Al Martin.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jack. And hey, yeah, how about my Cowboys, baby? 8-3, baby. Second in the NFC East. I'll let them, all right? Man, we have a lot to talk about on today's show. Again, as Jack just gave, you know, that the huge spiel, there's so much going on here when it comes to just sports in Michigan, folks. I mean, we'll talk about the Lions falling, and not just falling to the New England Patriots, but just getting just handed. My goodness, just a big win as the Patriots rolled in that one yesterday. So we'll talk about the Lions and Patriots in just a sec. We'll also dive into Michigan State as they topped Rutgers for Senior Day at home at Spartan Stadium. We'll talk about that game and the implications that it has now for Michigan State on the national scheme of things. What bowls do they have a shot at? And just the entire college football realm in general. And, we'll briefly talk about Michigan as they fall to Maryland, as they've been having the atrocious season continues for them. Brady Hoke's days are certainly numbered, if you ask me, folks. I would certainly be surprised if he keeps his job. I don't think that's going to happen. And you'll also get to hear from the national champion head coach, actually the MSU director of track and field, and now of the 2014 women's cross country national champions. Yes, Walt Drenth. You'll get to hear his thoughts on winning a national title. We actually had Walt on the show not too long ago as he talked about, you know, entering the postseason, his thoughts and expectations on how special this team could be. It's so funny because I was talking to my boss, Peter Warfier, at WKAR before we took the air today. And if you compare that interview to the interview you're going to hear today, I mean, my goodness, you know, it was a lot of coach speak, in that first interview, you know, just seeing as though he wanted to stay focused. He didn't want to, you know, get too high or get too low, wanted to stay even keel as his team embarked on this unbelievable journey. But now the emotions, you know, the lid is off the can now, and the emotions truly spilled over, and man, he is one happy guy. I mean, how can you not be happy after winning a national championship, huh? So you get to hear from Walt Drenth, a very revealing interview, including, you know, him seeking out some advice from arguably a guy who's a shoe-in for the Basketball Hall of Fame, probably the most recognizable man in the city of Lansing, in the realm of mid-Michigan. Yes, Tom Izzo. Walt actually got a chance to pick Tom Izzo's brain on just how to be and how to accomplish a national championship, so you don't want to miss that aspect of the interview as well. We'll also have our weekend winners. And folks, hey, you know, in honor of, Jock DeWitt. Jock DeWitt, he does a fantastic job here. He's a fantastic intern for us here at Current Sports. I was just talking to Jock just a minute ago. I don't know how we got on this subject. We were talking about our favorite numbers. Jock's favorite number is number 2. So in honor of Jock's favorite number, caller number 2, whoever calls in, our second caller will win tickets to go see the Michigan State men's basketball team take on Santa Clara tonight at 7 p.m. at the Breslin Center. We had caller number 3 on Friday of last week to win tickets to go see Michigan State as they play Loyola Chicago. Want to shout out Sue Schaefer. Sue Schaefer, she was fantastic. She came in and got the tickets. She's a diehard Current Sports listener. Told me that she listens each and every day. Thanks a lot, Sue. Hope you have had a great time during Friday night's game. She was caller number 3, but today we're going with caller number 2. So if you want to take a trip out to the Breslin Center tonight and enjoy that game, call in right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, Jack, how you doing, my man? You now join me to dive into a team that certainly finished in second place yesterday against the New England Patriots, the Detroit Lions. You are a diehard Lions fan. I like to call you our Lions expert. Man, a tough one for the Lions yesterday, huh?
Yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, I didn't think they're gonna win, but I figured they'd give them much more of a game than a 25-point loss.
Yeah, certainly, without a doubt. I mean, it was certainly shocking. And you know what? When looking at, you know, these past two games for the Lions, this was the stretch of this Lions schedule where we kind of powwowed and talked about, we'll see exactly how for real this team is. Facing a team like the Arizona Cardinals, one of the best in the league. The New England Patriots certainly are establishing themselves as one of the best in the league as well. They're always in that conversation each and every year. But seeing as though the Lions have now fallen to both the Cardinals and the Patriots, I believe that they've truly missed a golden opportunity to prove the doubters wrong out there. The doubters that, you know, harp on the Lions each and every season, no matter how much success they may have. Those that believe that the Lions still aren't there yet. This was a golden opportunity to shut those naysayers up. It kind of just slipped out of their hands. Now, don't get me wrong, because first off, I believe that, you know, and I always talk to Alex about this, panic meters and so on and so forth. Just when can you say at a point in the season where it's time to hit that panic meter and to say, okay, this team has some serious problems here. First off, I want to say out there, because I feel as though there are many people out there, especially looking in Twitterverse. I'm always on Twitter during the games. I actually happen to be covering the MSU women's basketball game at the time the Lions were on. So I was kind of following the action through Twitter, and there were many out there, especially during the last quarter of that game in the fourth, where the Lions had absolutely no chance of coming back, that were just completely bashing the Lions. You know, saying how this team is you know, same old Lions. I saw that a few times, tweeted yesterday, how many people feel as though the Lions, you know, they got lucky up until this point. But hey, I want to say that first off, the Detroit Lions, for me, for them to even be in the conversation to possibly, you know, make a huge statement as to where they are in franchise history and possibly beating the Cardinals and Patriots, which of course didn't happen. I never thought this team would be in position to even have that conversation at the beginning of this year. The Lions, with the injuries they have had before this year, and to look at how it's really been, you know, just kind of a system where, you know, if somebody's hurt, Jim Caldwell calls in the next number, and that guy has done the job. And they have certainly not missed a beat. So with the injuries and what through everything this team, from an injury standpoint, has been able to accomplish in lieu of that, it's certainly impressive nonetheless. So I don't think it's time to panic, especially looking at the rest of the schedule and who they have coming up. Jack, do you agree with that?
No, I completely agree. That was what I was going to bring up is, you know, they're sitting at 7-4 right now, which isn't bad. But the fact that they're a game behind Green Bay, you know, that doesn't really bode well for them, chasing them. But they got three winnable games at home coming up. You got the Bears on Thanksgiving, then you're going to play the Buccaneers and the Vikings before closing out at Chicago and Green Bay. So realistically, I think the Lions go 10-6, maybe 11-5, and they're going to skate their way in the playoffs, and then, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, certainly. All right, let's dissect this game. Now, Jack, for folks you don't know, Jack actually does an outstanding analysis report on just about every position out there on the field, and you kind of break down and give them grades, right?
Yep.
And you did one nonetheless for this game as well. So for me, I want to start off with the offense. Matthew Stafford struggles in this game, Jack. He was 18 for 46 for 264 yards, an interception, two sacks, no touchdowns. The Lions actually haven't scored a touchdown, and get this, folks, 11 quarters. 11 quarters. What is going on with this offense? This offense that has so many weapons. Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate. I mean, you look in the backfield. I don't believe Reggie Bush played yesterday.
Nope, he was inactive.
Yeah, but still, you got Joik Bell. I mean, there are a lot of pieces for Matthew Stafford to play with in this offense. Stafford doesn't get the job done against teams that are teams. And I mean that by Stafford, when you play the big dogs, Matthew Stafford just simply hasn't produced. I think I looked at his stat. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe somebody can look this up for me. But I believe against teams that have a winning record, Matthew Stafford has gone 0 for 16. I believe that is correct. Now, I want to go back and check that. I believe I saw that stat on ESPN. I want to double check that one because that is such an alarming stat to me. But again, winning against the big dogs is what Matthew Stafford struggles with. And it's what prevents Matthew Stafford from being a good to great quarterback to being in the conversation as one of the elites. And he did not get the job done. He's not gotten the job done in these past 2 weeks, Jack.
No, he hasn't. And they did have a golden opportunity last week against Arizona with Carson Palmer out to really take that game and send a message to the league that, hey, we're for real and this isn't the same old Lions. But one thing I don't understand is why did they re-sign Brandon Pettigrew if they were not going to target him? The dude has 8 receptions for 46 yards on the season, I believe. That's just unacceptable. That's your number one tight end. And then you've got your number two tight end, Eric Ebron, who's dropping passes. He was a first-round pick. There's plenty of needs they could have addressed in the draft, and instead they get this kid, and I don't even know if they have confidence in him anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And yeah, that's the thing. Stafford has to show up against teams that you know you have to compete against. And for me, let's go into defensive end now. I thought that defense was solid early in the game. Early in that game, I thought the defense played a solid game. But then they gave up 17 points in the second quarter. That can't happen. And then they ended up allowing a season-high 439 yards. That is uncharacteristic for this Detroit Lions defense, which, frankly, has been pretty solid all season long. You know, number one ranked pretty much all season long. I believe they now relinquished that spot to the Miami Dolphins. But the defense was really surprising to me. Special teams also had some woes. They allowed Danny Mendoza to return a second quarter kickoff, 81 yards. Mendoza then returned a punt 74 yards for a touchdown. Matthew Prater, hey, I may cut him a little slack here because because the field goal that he missed was a 54-yarder, but he went 3 for 4. That's not going to get the job done against Tom Brady and company. That's not going to get the job done against the top tier in the NFL.
Definitely not. No, it's not. But Danny Amendola, as you said, I think you called him Mendoza.
Oh, my bad. Amendola. Yeah, my bad, Danny.
It was after the one of their field goals, right? They're on the 2-yard line. They like to kick a field goal, which I didn't agree with. But, you know, I guess take points when you can get them, especially when you can't score on offense. And then they give up that 81-yard kick return, and that basically sums up the game right there. A lot of the blame, I think, should go on Joe Lombardi's shoulders. Why? You don't have to pass from the pocket every time. You can roll out. You can throw quick passes. That's going to get everyone involved. It's not going to be a lot of defense when they blitz to get to Stafford. So they got to try some new things. You know, they can't just go stereotypical, all right, 5-step drop back, and then let's throw it deep to Johnson or Tate, because that's not working.
No, I totally agree, and that's another point I wanted to make. I mean, there were some odd calls, some head-scratching calls from this Lions team, specifically when you talk about, you know, what you just brought up, you know, Joe Lombardi here. Again, I want to bring up midway through the first quarter, 2nd and 19. Stop me if you remember this moment here, Jack. Midway through the second quarter, 2nd and 19, you know, from the Lions 12, following a sack, Joe Lombardi, he caught a run for Joik Bell that I believe produced 3 yards. The Lions took over at their 20 with 2:42 left in the second quarter. Lombardi caught a Theo Riddick run, then let the clock run down to 2 minutes. Then ran a hurry-up offense that produced a missed field goal and still gave the Patriots the ball back with enough time to convert on a field goal. Do you remember that stretch, Jack?
I do remember that, and I think the reason they let that run down to 2 minutes was because they had a lot of respect for Tom Brady and what he can do in a short amount of time.
Right.
And they had timeouts, too, so it didn't work out. You know, you kick a field goal, you hope for the best, and I think Matt Prater has done a decent job with the Lions, and I think he is the guy going forward, at least for the rest of this year. Like you said, he missed over 50-yard field goal. That's not a gimme, and he hooked it a little bit left.
Exactly.
You know, not a big deal.
Yeah, you can't harp on, even though, you know, it's sort of amplified, seeing as though the woes that the Lions have had at that kicking position starting from the beginning of this season. I mean, any field goal that Matt, you know, misses, it could be a 100-yard field goal. Lions fans are not going to be happy. But I hear you on that. I totally agree with you on that. Now, again, you talk about the rest of the schedule here. They play the Bears, Bucks, and Vikings at home. A quick turnaround. You got to have a short memory now. This would be an ideal bounce-back game for the Lions at home on Thanksgiving Day against a Bears team that simply hasn't been great all year. They can beat the Bears, Bucks, and the Vikings. Simple as that. Then they go on the road again, as you talked about, Jack. They play the Bears again, this time at Chicago. The game that I'm really only worried about is against Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers, who have been playing out of their mind. They had a convincing win over the Minnesota Vikings over the weekend. But I think they will go 11-5. The question for me, Jack, is, will that be enough for the Lions? Because looking at the parity that is in the NFC right now, there are some legitimate teams that can end the year with 10 or 11 wins that may not make the playoffs here. It's really interesting to me because I tell you what, the way that this playoff system is set in the NFL, first off, I think it needs to be changed, because if you look at, you know, the other conference in the NFC, I mean, there are teams there that probably won't even sniff 10 or 11 wins, but will probably get into playoffs and ease into the playoffs. Whereas in the North, again, the Lions can legitimately go 11-5, maybe finish in second place in the NFC North, and still not make the playoffs or squeak in. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, it is. And I'm looking right now, and we've got the New Orleans Saints on top of the NFC South. They're 4-6.
4-6.
4-6. And then second place is Atlanta, who, I mean, they haven't done anything all season. You know, they blew that 20-point lead to the Lions, or 21-point lead in London. But yeah, I mean, there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3 other teams that are, or two other teams that are 7-4 that aren't in first place. So like you said, you know, if the Lions tie, if all three of those teams go 11-5, one of them might not make the playoffs.
Exactly. That is so crazy to me. I think the NFL needs to take a serious look at their playoff and wild card system and make some changes here. But I think, for, you know, now moving forward, I think this game could be a wake-up call for the Lions. Even though they don't get it done against two of the top dogs in the league, this could be a wake-up call. Maybe they rally against the Bears, Bucks, and Vikings. I think they do. I still think, and sticking to my guns here, I think they go 11-5. The Packers game is really the only game I'm worried about. And, you know, again, with all the injuries that this team has had up to this point, I never would even fathom that the Lions would even be – I didn't think we'd be having this conversation at this point in the year. So, Lions fans, my message, the Al Martin message, don't panic. It is still – looking at what the Lions have coming up, hey, they could still rally and turn a lot of heads to close out this year. Alex, final thoughts on the Lions? You saw them on Sunday, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, you know, I caught the game. And my final thought here, guys, is the Lions, if you look at the records of the teams that they've beaten – not a lot of those teams are playoff teams right now. And for me, I was seeing it the whole time. I was gulping the Kool-Aid. I wasn't downing the Kool-Aid, Al. So when you look at the Cardinals, who actually lost to the Seahawks pretty badly, and you look at the Patriots, those in my eyes were the only two legitimate playoff teams that the Lions have played the entire season. And when you match up against the big dogs, the Lions obviously could not provide. I'm pretty alarmed with the Lions moving forward. Now they're on the brink of even making the playoffs.
Well, what about Miami, though?
Yeah, I mean, Miami, that's a team that also had an unfortunate defeat, too, recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think that's a playoff team, though. I like Miami.
It could be. That's the thing. That might be a team better than the Saints and some of the other teams that they've beaten. But in the end, man, I mean, I think the strength of schedule for the Lions has been pretty on their side for most of the year. And what happens against the Bears on Thursday, what happens against Green Bay at the end of the year, it's going to be a big determinant, Al.
Yeah, it certainly will. Folks, if you want to weigh in on our conversation here at Current Sports, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, the second caller number two, whoever caller number two is, will win a pair of tickets to go see the Michigan State men's basketball team take on Santa Clara tonight at the Breslin Center, a 7 p.m. tip-off there. Again, the number to call is 517-355-9527. All right, before we hit our first break, I want to bring up the MSU football team. Again, folks, it was Senior Day at Spartan Stadium on Saturday. And I tell you what, the football team, hey, they did what they were supposed to do against Rutgers. Senior right receiver and cornerback, I guess you can say, Tony Lippitt, he surpassed the 1,000-yard receiving mark with 72 receiving yards on 5 receptions. The Spartans look to finish the regular season with 10 wins. They travel to Penn State to take on the Nittany Lions on Saturday. Well, I tell you what, Jack, man, I was really impressed. First off, I want to shout out this guy because I think he is one of the more underrated players in all of the nation. Jeremy Langford is so good at what he does. He's so patient. He has a burst of speed if he catches you outside of the tackles. I mean, he's great. Jeremy Langford is great. And he even has sort of a power running game when he needs it to be. He tops 100 yards for the 15th straight time against a Big Ten team. Nick Hill also got some action. I think he looked great. He had one touchdown when he crossed the goal line, took a really nasty smack right on the dome. But, hey, he's a tough guy. He scored a touchdown there. The running backs were superb in this game. Tony Lippitt's versatility, as I just mentioned, he not only played right receiver, but he played corner as well. Actually, a position that he played as a redshirt freshman in 2011. Tony Lippitt looked very, very good, and he's going to be a heck of an NFL player. He certainly had a breakout year. Looking at Tony's journey, it's certainly remarkable seeing, you know, where he came from when he first entered this program to being one of the elite wide receivers who can play. Again, like D'Antonio said after the game on Saturday, D'Antonio's a guy, when he looked at Tony Lippitt, when he recruited him to come to this program, he saw Tony Lippitt as a versatile guy that can play both sides of the ball. He showed that on Saturday, and I think you'll get to see it against Penn State as well. I was very impressed.
I was, too. I mean, he looked like he hasn't missed a beat at cornerback, and it's been, what, over 2 years? So
yeah, yeah.
I was really impressed with him. He's been one of my favorite players to watch. If you go back to think about 2 years ago when all the receivers were dropping balls, Tony Lippitt has taken such a big step forward for this team, and he's been Connor Cook's go-to guy. And you don't go over 1,000 yards receiving in 9 or 11 games unless you're a pretty special player, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's certainly special. I thought Connor Cook, he was pretty solid as well. One play I want to bring up. Alex, did you see this play? Connor Cook is getting rushed on. And, I forget what quarter it was, but Connor is getting rushed on. Things are breaking down. He eludes a tackle.
I think he eludes two of them.
I don't know if it was two, but the one that stood out to me is the one where he could have been taken down from the back, but he somehow feels the presence of the guy and gets out of it. He directs McGarrett Kings down the field, hits him right on the money for a 44-yard reception. Man, that was beautiful. Connor Cook, I tell you what, he just makes things out of nothing sometimes. He's a pretty special quarterback.
He's a gamer, man. That's the thing with Connor Cook is even if the play's blowing up, I've heard this from Otis Wiley on the sidelines, too. If the play isn't there or the play is not ran right, Connor has that ability to just be a gamer, to make something out of nothing, get a little bit of that Brett Favre action there, just kind of making something out of nothing. So, yeah, that was phenomenal. But for the entire game, you got to give it up to the defense. They didn't give up any big plays. That was hounding them for a lot of the year, too. That defense still ranked with the turnover margin. They're, plus 19 or whatever it was going into the game. highest in the FBS. So as much as they're not the number one ranked defense that they were last year with yardage, they're still a top tier defense, and you can't deny that when you look at Pat Narduzzi's track record too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Great for me. It was the defensive end of the ball that won it for the Spartans. But again, like you said, Connor Cook made some big plays. A lot of receivers. I mean, to be able to put in all your second and third team guys in there. You saw Terry take some snaps. You saw a lot of second, third string receivers in there. That was great.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, another thing that stands out about Connor Cook to me is that, you know, even when receivers are sometimes double covered at times and seem like there's no window, or there may be a very small tight window, Connor Cook, and it especially stood out to me on Saturday against Rutgers, Connor Cook can deliver the ball in that tight area and give where only his receiver can have a chance on that football in tight coverage. I think it's very few quarterbacks can do that. Connor Cook is certainly one of them. But yeah, he had a fantastic game. So basically the Spartans did what they were supposed to do on Saturday, folks. They were supposed to beat Rutgers. They have to win out here. As far as bowl chances, I think the four bowls you're looking at here is either the Orange, Fiesta, Peach, or the Cotton Bowl. Those are the four bowls that Michigan State is vying for. There were actually some representatives in the press box from the Orange Bowl at the Rutgers game. So, hey, that may, if the Spartans went out here, that may be alluding to something there. We don't know. But, again, Orange, Fiesta, Peach, and Cotton, that's what the Spartans are playing for now. I guess you can call Saturday a business trip, to say the least. And, hey, there were a few moments here. How about Michael Geiger? How about him? Did you see that fake field goal with the run showing some jets from the kicker? That was impressive, Alex.
Yeah, he's getting a little bit of treatment or some teaching from Mike Sadler there. A little bit of how-to from Sadler. I'm sure Sadler showed him a move or two.
Yeah, that was hot. That was hot. You know what? Even though the play right after that, Nick Hill would fumble the ball and give the ball right back to Rutgers, that was still a cool moment. I thought that D'Antonio should have thrown the challenge flag, because I thought that Michael Geiger got across those pylons. I was looking at a few of the media members in the press box like, that's a touchdown.
Right.
Where's the flag at? And D'Antonio also talked about it in the presser. He said, yeah, we probably should have thrown a flag there. That may have been a touchdown. What a moment that would have been for Michael Geiger if they would have thrown that challenge flag, and it would have been a touchdown. Pretty cool moment in the game. But yeah, anyway, it was a business trip for the Spartans. They now move on to play Penn State this Saturday, folks. Well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, you'll get to hear from the man behind the national champion MSU women's cross country team. Walt Drenth, folks. Yes, they accomplished something that, my goodness, hasn't been done at MSU since 2007, when it was done by the MSU hockey team, winning a national championship, folks. Wow. You'll get to hear from Walt in just a sec. Don't touch that dial. Don't worry, baby.
Just call my name. First off, I want to congratulate our women's cross-country team winning the national championship. Outstanding job. Anytime you do something of that nature, truly is spectacular. So congratulations to Walt Drenth and his team.
Yeah, I mean, I found out actually later. I tweeted about it later and texted Walt the night before. But I was so happy for them. I mean, that's a serious accomplishment. You know, it's one thing to be a Big Ten champion and make a little noise, but to win it all is something really special. And I believe I was told it was the first women's NCAA championship in any sport. So what an amazing feat for them. But I don't know if it spilled over onto our team, to be honest. But I know I was really excited for them. What an accomplishment and recognition for our program.
Yes, to say the least, folks. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You just heard from MSU head football coach Mark D'Antonio and head coach of the MSU women's basketball team, Susie Merchant, as they both over the weekend, they both had games, of course, football, the football team playing Rutgers, and the MSU women's basketball team also in action yesterday. That was Susie Merchant during her post-game press conference after beating IUPUI, addressing her thoughts on the MSU women's cross-country team winning the national championship. Quite an accomplishment, to say the least. Now, led by four individual runners in the top 25, the Michigan State women's cross-country team claimed the program's first ever NCAA cross-country championship on Saturday afternoon. MSU, which won all six of its team scored events this season, they became the second Big Ten school to win a national cross-country title, and the first since Wisconsin won back-to-back championships in 1984 and 1985. Now, it also marks the first team national championship for MSU since the hockey team captured the 2007 title. Now, the championship is the second by a women's team in school history. MSU softball actually won the AIAW national title in 1976. So, Susie, that's actually the second one, but man, what remarkable stuff there. So, I actually got a chance the day after, Saturday, Sunday morning, I came in and had Walt via phone to talk about the remarkable accomplishment. And here's how that conversation went.
Doing pretty well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, I tell you what, Walt, again, this is such an exciting time for Michigan State and your program, specifically, the, of course, the women's cross-country team. I got to ask, what was the scene like yesterday in Indiana when you all found out that you had won the national title?
Well, I guess there was some pretty obvious excitement. I think, you know, it was kind of cool. What was I thought was really cool was how excited they were when they finished, even before they knew how it had definitively turned out. Because they'd run so well, and they recognized that at the finish line that it was the celebration had started even before they'd end. You know, they'd determined the final score.
Wow! So they knew in the process of running that they had this thing locked up already.
I don't know if it was as much about the outcome as just that they knew they'd run as well as they could have, and we taught that's really a big part of. You know, what we teach is you can't really control what the other teams do. It's a different, you know, it's a different kind of sport. So you celebrate how, you know, if you were all in there wasn't a person on the team that didn't feel like that. They put every fiber of themselves into the process and into the race. So I think they were as excited about just how they had, you know, performed as a group as they were, you know, knowing that finally and definitively what the outcome was.
Wow, that's unbelievable stuff. Now, when you guys found out, you know, the definite outcome of you guys winning this title, I mean, as a coach, what did you tell your team and what sort of emotion was running through your body during that moment?
Great pride in them. Their approach to their work, their approach to each other and their team, it's just been unbelievable. And I think that it's typically, the fiber of championship teams is their expectations of each other and how they treat each other consistently. I think those things are probably the things that I take the greatest pride in. It's been a phenomenal group to work with and to be around. So I think those are the things that you kind of reflect on right away is like knowing how special it is that, you know, teams like this don't grow on trees. You know, you can work a long time and have great, you know, great groups, but this is a special group of people.
Now, Walt, you and I were talking before this interview, and I told you that, you know, I was out covering actually the Michigan State football game for Senior Day against Rutgers on Saturday. And, you know, us media members in the press box didn't officially get the word until it was announced over the PA system. We all kind of looked at each other like, oh, my gosh, they just won a national title. I mean, the buzz immediately started from there. Then Twitter world went on fire. I mean, it was kind of a very cool moment. Even in the post-game presser after the football game, D'Antonio, before he took any questions addressing how his team performed on the gridiron, he shouted out you. He shouted out the team for winning a national title. I mean, what type of outreach from other coaching personnel from Michigan State have you gotten to congratulate you and the squad?
I mean, the outreach is unbelievable. My phone just exploded with texts and phone calls, and it was really gratifying to have your peers recognize and show appreciation for it. It started well before that. I got a chance to sit down with Coach Izzo probably 3 weeks ago. It was just before the conference meet, and just talked to him a little bit about his experiences going through, you know, trying to win a national championship and trying to, you know, having a team that's ranked number one. And it, you know, his insights were really valuable. Of course, he's done it a number of times.
yeah, exactly. Right.
You know, you gain a, you know, I mean, not that I've always had an immense amount of respect for him, but when you go through it and you realize, you know, that he goes through it routinely, it's quite an ordeal. And I our staff is a great staff. We're really fortunate, at Michigan State to have a close group of coaches. And it was great to have them feedback. I got a lot of good lucks and, you know, almost from everybody prior to the meet, and then have some touches afterwards was unbelievable. So yeah, it was cool.
Now, I'm curious, going back to that Izzo chat, you know, before, you know, things really started to rile up with you guys in the postseason. I mean, what stood out to you the most about Tom Izzo and his approach to being, you know, to compete on the national stage every year?
Yeah, you know, he did, you know, for being on the national stage, I mean, we have a competitive women's cross-country program, and our track and field program's good, but, you know, it's not at the same, obviously, it's near the same level as his has been consistently, and he did, I mean, he had a lot of things that he said that were, they just reinforced what I was hoping. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that's right. I mean, stuff that I thought was right, you know, just the consistency and don't change things and don't, you know, like he, even at one point, you know, he said, hey, I'll come over and talk to him. And then he sort of backed on and said, you know, that's probably not a very good idea because we don't want to, you know, he said, you don't want to get him, you know, overly wound up about it.
Right.
And you know, what he did was, you know, his experience really, you know, kind of helped ground the way I was looking at it, just in terms of, you know, kind of, and reinforcing some of the ways I was looking at it, just in terms of kind of keeping everything the same and trying to keep the pressure off and just let them have fun with it.
Yes, certainly. So did any coaches call you after they got the news yesterday?
I got a lot of texts. We got, you know, again, I had a few phone calls, but and then some coaches showed up, and we arrived back on campus. Coach Joseph, a softball coach, you know, some people from sports medicine, Melinda from, you know, there were some people that showed up when the bus arrived, which was kind of cool, too.
That is fantastic stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us, we are chatting with the MSU Director of Track and Field and the national champion women's cross-country team. Still surreal when you say it, folks. Now, you know, I want to talk briefly here, Walt, before we continue our discussion about the what I'm dubbing as the MSU standard now. I always say personnel who are in Mid-Michigan, who are Spartan fans, Spartan alumni, fans of this school, are certainly spoiled because you got, you know, a football team who, you talk about competing on the national stage. I mean, for goodness sake, they just won a Rose Bowl. You got the MSU men's soccer team who went to an Elite Eight last year. The, you know, Susie Merchant and the women's basketball team are constantly competing. They won a Big Ten championship last season. You talked about Tom Izzo. I mean, across the board, MSU sports are arguably competitive with any school in this nation. The MSU standard is certainly high. Has success of other sports, besides yours, Walt, really driven and inspired your program and team?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think anytime, you know, any sport's doing well, the rest of us benefit from it. You know, whether it's through residual attention or just, you know, creating a high standard of expectation. I think that there's benefit to that without any question. It's an exceptional group of people as head coaches. I'll go back to, you know, our team. And I think a great reason why we've been successful is them as people. And I think that's the reason. They're exceptional coaches, but they're exceptional people. The coaching staff, the people that I get to interact with from other sports, are just phenomenal people. Whether it's Coach Joseph with softball or Coach Boss with baseball or, you know, Coach Weiss. We just, like, across the board, it's just a great group of people. Coach Minkle's been at it for a long time, and I always appreciate having an opportunity to run into him and talk to him because of his perspective and the things that he's experienced. So I feel pretty blessed to be a part of the staff of this group. And I'd hate to go much further without saying, you know, the staff that I work with on a daily basis has been great in support. But Coach Senekevich, she helps me with the distance runners, and she's an unbelievable coach. She could take the team over right now and have a high level of success. I'm certain that she could have done this or better with that group. She's so capable, and she does an amazing job of, you know, giving our athletes a perspective from a highly competitive runner standpoint. She was an All-American here and did some really special things herself. I could barely take any credit for this whole thing in the long run.
Well, I tell you what, it is certainly, you got to have a fantastic staff to work along with you, Walt, to accomplish something like this. And one of the things I want to bring up, which I thought was very interesting, because when looking at the pictures and looking at some of the tweets from reporters who were out there covering you guys, I mean, man, oh, man, it seemed very, very cold in Indiana. I mean, to be able to battle through those cold conditions, to come out and finish right where you need to be to win a national title. I mean, can you talk about battling through the cold and mentally how focused and strong you have to be to do something like that?
Well, I think that, you know, there's no question, Al, that the focus was there. Honestly, you live here. You know what the weather was like last week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The weather in Indiana was better.
Get out of here. Are you serious? Oh, my goodness. Well, thank goodness you guys weren't in Michigan.
30s, and we thought we'd just, you know, we sort of felt like we'd hit the jackpot. We've had a chance to really see everything this year from a standpoint of weather. Our first meet in Oregon, it was 96 when we finished when the women finished racing, and when the men finished, it was like 93 or 94. So that's a pretty extreme heat for a distance runner in a race.
Right.
And then last week Friday, for our regional championships, it didn't get higher than, I think it was about 25 when we ran, and there was a wind chill. So, you know, we've kind of seen everything this year, and the weather's, you know, in our mind, sort of let up a little bit for Saturday.
Wow.
Even though it's, you know, in the mid to high 30s and windy.
Yeah, so you guys kind of got lucky in the whole scheme of things. I guess I'm totally wrong, man. That's unbelievable. Yeah. So you guys, well, I mean, it doesn't faze you when you go through like that.
It's a tough-minded group, and I think that it wouldn't have mattered what the weather was. It wouldn't have mattered. Our approach is going to be the same. And you know, we learn things every week, and I think the value of being in really difficult weather conditions the previous Friday at the regional championship helped us because, you know, whatever concerns or fears they may have had, we worked through them at that meet and realized that, you know, kind of come away from it, well, the weather doesn't really matter.
There you go.
And I think, yeah. You know, so I, you know, and everybody has to do it too. So, you know, you start feeling sorry for yourself. You're worrying about something you can't control.
That's right, because other teams are certainly dealing with it just as much as you. I tell you that, Walt. All right, now that you've done this, Walt, I mean, won a national title, you know, as a coach, what do you reach for now after accomplishing, ideally, you know, the highest goal in the sport? I mean, what is that next mountain to climb for you?
At the risk of sounding, you know, crazy, I the outcome here wasn't going to define me personally. So my goal as a coach, I feel like I'm a teacher first. I love to coach. I'm very fortunate to be able to do this, you know, and make a living at it. And next year is a new adventure. I mean, every year the adventure, frankly, it changes, you know, what the path is. But ultimately, our goal is always going to be to just see how good we can be. So we'll assess the next year's team when the time is right, and we'll start setting, you know, helping them set some goals. And we'll be as excited about doing that as we were about doing this year. I won't feel any less of a coach or less of a person based on the outcome next year. I like to think of myself as something I coach, but I'm hopefully defined as something else. A husband and a father and you know, a teacher. Those are probably more important priorities to me.
There you go. As we like to say here on Current Sports, Walt, you know, sports are great and all. We love to dive into the X's and O's, but we love to go beyond the X's and O's, and that is certainly an important aspect to everything. It puts a lot of things in perspective. Very, very intriguing answer right there, Walt. All right, now, I want to just talk about the personnel on this year's team. Of course, sophomore Rachel Shulis, she plays fourth overall and was one of four runners to finish among the top 21 to lead MSU. You know, you had senior Julia Otwell, Leah O'Connor. She was 17th. I mean, such an incredible group of young women this year, Walt. How do you build upon this type of success, and how do you duplicate it?
The building of, you know, it's their program, and they have done a phenomenal job of setting standards of behavior. So how we build on it is, I guess we'll try to identify some things that our student athletes, you know, and Coach Izzo puts this really well. It's like, you know, what is your legacy going to be when he talks to each class, each graduating group of seniors? And we try to do something similar to that. It's like, you know, what influence are you going to have on the future? Because, you know, this group's legacy is going to obviously be having won a national championship, but it's also going to be what happens after them. You know, who decides to join us, you know, to help, and just in terms of recruits. how the next generation behaves, how they treat each other. So I think that there's a lot of things that go into kind of go into that. And I can't say enough about each one of those people. We have a large team, and those seven women that were able to race on Saturday represent some really strong ideals. And Rachel was fantastic. She'd been fantastic in every major meet we've run this year.
Mm-hmm.
So her fourth place finish, we weren't surprised by. Lindsay Clark had a fantastic race. She kind of battled through a little bit of an Achilles problem. When it gets cold, sometimes that stuff flares up. And to finish 11th, she's been climbing the ladder all year. Leah O'Connor has been, Leah and Julia have been, as much as anything, they've been like phenomenal leaders, been here for 5 years. Sarah Kroll was the Big Ten champion 2 years ago, 2012, on our home course.
Mm-hmm.
And, for her to be the fifth person, and she's gotten better, and the role, having her role change, I can't say enough about that. She's gone from being our number one runner to being, arguably one of our best leaders. And if you look at the results, the way they line up, she was unbelievable. She would have been in the top two or three of everyone else's team in the country, and she was our fifth, which is why we had a chance and were able to win.
That is certainly true. And, last question here, Walt, and you kind of briefly touched on it in your answer there. The word legacy, whenever a program accomplishes something like this, years down the road, I mean, this team will be looked at, by pretty much every kid who comes through the cross country MSU women's team. And they're going to look at this year and say, okay, we did it here. What went right here? How do we measure how to get back there? And, you talked about Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo always brings up the Mateen Cleaves days and how they were able to win a national championship. And MSU football, a lot of the talk was how do you get back to the Rose Bowl or compete for a 4-team playoff. This year's team is now a staple in MSU women's cross country. What do you want this team's legacy to be when people years down the line look at what this team accomplished this season?
I mean, I think the benchmark is going to be them as people and leaders and teammates. I think that's if they can, if they trust us, and this group's trusted us. Allie Wiersma, she was our sixth today or yesterday, and at Oregon she overheated, and then she struggled at Minnesota in the heat, and then came out in the last few meets and just she's been unbelievable. And Katie Landwehr got sick and wasn't able to run at a regional championship, and Sarah Stassen, who was all region and then didn't run at the national championships. I mean, each one of those kids have just displayed an incredible amount of character. They've let go and trusted, and I think that when we meet with the next group of people, when we go to camp and we talk about what was it that made them successful, we're going to talk about them thinking about the team first, thinking about helping people get better. If they help their teammates get better, it will happen to them. We'll talk about the value and expectation, and I think I think all those things are going to be part of of their legacy. But those are things that the athletes that are returning have seen and will understand that are vital. I think, from Coach Nikevich and I's standpoint, all those things, and then trusting us. This group has trusted us. In good times and bad times, they've said, what do we need to do next? They haven't come into the office and said, I think I need, or I wish I had, or why didn't we? They say, what do you think we need to do? And when you have that, and I'm sure every coach on this campus would say the same thing, when your athletes come in the door and say, what do I need to do? And they buy in and they walk out and say, okay, that's what I need to do. Then the success happens, because we're all recruiting good athletes. It's just a matter of them, them understanding, how to let people coach them and just be teammates.
Very well said, folks. MSU Director of Track and Field and the national champion women's cross country team. Hey, Walt, everybody, on behalf of everybody here at Current Sports and here at WKAR, we want to say congratulations. Quite an accomplishment, and thanks for your time today, Walt.
Much obliged. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Walt Drenth, folks, one of a kind. Gotta love that. You take care, Walt.
Take care.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll go into our weekend winner segment here on the show, where we sort of capitalize the entire weekend and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in sports.
Also, we still got tickets left, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Call now if you want to take a trip tonight to the Breslin Center and enjoy the MSU men's basketball game as they take on Santa Clara. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on, yeah, what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. Oh, boy, there's nothing like listening to Marvin Gaye to start your week, huh? Oh, boy, we like to dub this every Monday, Martis Monday. We play music from a particular artist, but the catch is that artist has to start with the letter M. Yeah, Marvin Gaye, I think, fits that criteria. Man, he was good. All right, folks. Well, 10 minutes left in the show. Again, if you want to call in and discuss, give your final thoughts on anything we've talked about on the show today, 517-355-9527. We've still got those MSU and Santa Clara MSU men's basketball tickets available. 517-355-9527 is the number to call to try and win those. To wrap up our show, though, we do each and every Monday, we sort of look at the entire weekend and pick and choose certain athletes, teams, or personnel who we thought had the best weekend in sports. So without further ado, folks, it's time for Weekend Winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
Yes, these are the best around. At least when looking at these past 2 days over the weekend, folks. First off, I want to start off our current sports weekend winners by shouting out the three top teams in Mid-Michigan football, I should say, that have now booked a ticket to downtown Detroit to play on the gridiron that's home of the Lions at Ford Field for a state championship. Shout out to head coach of the Ithaca Yellow Jackets and the entire Ithaca Yellow Jackets football team for booking their ticket. They will now compete for a fifth straight state championship. They have the longest winning streak in all of high school football, not just Michigan, but this entire nation. This is the longest football winning streak in high school football in the entire nation, folks. Ithaca Yellow Jackets, they just keep on winning, folks. They will actually play at 4:30 p.m. against Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central. Again, that's Friday at 4:30, Ithaca versus Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central. I will be in the house to cover that game and to give you all of the local post-game reaction from that win or lose for Ithaca. So I'll be down at 4 Phil covering that one. Lansing Sexton, shout out to Dan Bogan, head coach of the Lansing Sexton Big Reds football team and the entire Big Reds football team for winning as well over the weekend. They will take on Grand Rapids South Christian on Friday at 7:30 p.m. I'll also be covering that one as well. Again, Lansing Sexton, my goodness, what a season for them. They are for real, folks. And how about the man that is certainly a local legend around here, Jim Ahern and his Lansing Catholic Cougars. They won as well this weekend. They will take on Grand Rapids West Catholic. So two Grand Rapids teams will be playing two local Lansing teams for a state championship title. Lansing Catholic will take on Grand Rapids West Catholic Saturday at 4:30 p.m. So that's the game right before Lansing Sexton. So shout out to the Yellow Jackets, the Big Reds, and the Cougars for making it and booking their trip downtown Detroit at Ford Field. Wow. Certainly remarkable. Hey, also, I have a kind of elongated list here for weekend winners. Also, of course, how can you not have the MSU women's cross-country team on your weekend winners list? Wow, what an accomplishment, winning a national championship. I mean, that's what every program strives for. Professional, college, whatever you play, you strive to win a national title, to call yourself the creme de la creme
Okay, and that's what the MSU women's cross country team did on Saturday. That is wow. Just unbelievable. And thanks a lot to Walt Drimp for his time talking about the moment and talking about what this means to his program. Also, folks, MSU soccer. MSU men's soccer. They defeated Oakland to move on to the sweetness of 16. How about that? They will play Washington on Sunday at 1 p.m. at DeMartin Stadium. How about that, folks? Their game against Oakland was also at DeMartin Stadium over the weekend. So the MSU men's soccer team is also turning some heads. They are good every year. My goodness. Shout out to Damon Rensing and his squad. And, yes, I want to bring up Odell Beckham Jr. Alex, when I saw this catch, I immediately agreed with Chris Collinsworth, who was doing the color with along with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football. I mean, this catch, if you didn't see it, folks, the New York Giants took on the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. And I'm sitting there watching. Of course, you guys know I'm a big, big Cowboys fan. And, you know, all of a sudden, Eli, you know, goes back in the pocket and delivers a bomb to Odell Beckham Jr. This kid stretches out, his body almost parallel to the ground. It looks as though, if you look at the picture and look at the video, really closely, it looks like he just got his middle finger, his index finger, and his thumb on the ball as he's stretching out, one-handed, no help from his other hand, grabs it in, and not to mention, the play was dubbed pass interference as well. He had to fight off a defender to even have a chance at the ball. The Giants score off of it. He crosses the pylons. The greatest catch I have ever seen. Unbelievable. Odell Beckham Jr., on that catch alone, you are one of my weekend winners. Alex, did you see that catch? That was just sick.
Yeah, CNN has its own headline for the catch on the front page news.
Wow, really? CNN has a headline for it. Wow.
You have the Ebola scare, then you have Odell Beckham Jr.
Some parody there, I see, right?
But oh, hey, my goodness. You got to give a weekend winner. It's Dante Bray, who just called in to win the tickets. So congrats to Dante Bray of East Lansing. If you're listening, Al will give you a call after the show, and he'll tell you how to pick those up.
Dante, my man. Congratulations, Dante.
That's right. He's calling from East Lansing. And then also another weekend winner. How about the men's and women's swimming and dive teams? They beat Northwestern this weekend in the three-day series. Men's taking first, women taking second. It was a great weekend for MSU athletics all around.
Mike, I tell you what, Spartan fans are spoiled. Spoiled rotten of success. I mean, my good. I mean, everywhere you look. I mean, that's why I talked about the MSU standard. I had to ask Walt that because it doesn't matter what sport it is. You can expect the Spartans to compete in it. Wow, unbelievable stuff. I have one weekend loser I want to call out really briefly to end the show, Alex. I want to call out John Calipari. Did you see what happened over the weekend? John Calipari, he's a famed coach. He actually, him and his Kentucky Wildcats, they beat Boston on Friday to improve to 4-0 on the season. They have one of the best college basketball teams each and every year. John Calipari is such a busy man. But, you know, he thought it'd be kind of cool to, of course, shout out his daughter on her birthday. He said, he tweeted it out. He says, quote, "It's my baby girl's birthday today. She turns 25. Ellen and I are so proud of what she's becoming." That's all fine and dandy. That is such a touching moment, John. But it wasn't her birthday. He was a day off, folks. Megan actually tweeted, Megan Calipari, that's his daughter's name. She tweeted back at Coach saying, quote, "My birthday is tomorrow. Hashtag awkward." Then John... this is a hilarious story to me. Then John...
I don't blame her for the two, though.
Dude. Yeah, and then John responds by saying, "Wait, it's the 22nd? It's not the 23rd? Oops. Megan's birthday is tomorrow. Too many games in too many days. LOL, love you, Megan." That's hilarious. John is that busy where he forgot his daughter's birthday. Come on, man. Come on, John. You got to do better, my friend. All right. Well, that's our show for today. That wraps up this Monday edition of Current Sports. I want to give a shout out to all of you who tuned in for today's show. Shout out to Walt Drenth for his time again. MSU women's cross country team, national champions. Wow, it still blows my mind when I say it. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people. We make it.